Okay, let's unpack this. You know how when frost forms on a window, or even when these like high-tech surfaces like thin films are grown for electronics, they aren't perfectly smooth.
Right, they always have these bumps and dips, some kind of texture.
Exactly. Why does that happen? And maybe more scientifically, what actually controls the texture, the roughness of that surface as it grows?
It's a really fundamental question, actually. It pops up whenever disordered systems build up over time, when particles or atoms or whatever land on a surface and stick, that randomness, it just naturally creates fluctuations in height.
So you get higher bits and lower bits just by chance.
Pretty much. And understanding how those height fluctuations, that roughness, how it changes over time, and also how it changes depending on how big a surface you're looking at, well, that turns out to be critical in a lot of different fields.
And that is precisely what we're diving into today. We are pulling apart a specific paper. It's from 1988, published in Physical Review A. It's titled Ballistic Aggregation Surface Scaling Theory and Simulation. The authors are Baird, Kessler, Ramanlal, Sander, and Savitt.
Yeah, quite a lineup. And our goal here really is to make sense of this specific piece of research. We're going to look at the particular model they used. They call it finite density ballistic aggregation. We need to understand the questions they were asking, how they went about answering them using both computer simulations and theory, and crucially, zero in on what they found that was, well, pretty unexpected and important back then.
Right. So we'll be looking at things like, what are they called? Scaling exponents.
Exactly. These are numbers that basically tell you the rate at which the roughness grows, statistically speaking.
And also the effect of how many particles are arriving, how dense that flux is.
Yep, that's a key part of their model. And also this subtle but really important difference between just the highest points on the surface versus the actual region where new particles are actively sticking.
It sounds a bit dense, I admit.
It is technical, yeah. But the payoff, I think, is seeing how science actually progresses, especially those moments when, experiments or simulations throw up results that just don't quite fit the theories we have.
That's always where the interesting stuff happens.
Absolutely. So maybe first, why even bother studying how surfaces get rough during growth? Why does it matter?
Well, the paper itself mentions it's important for understanding physical stuff like adsorption, catalysis.
Right. How well catalysts work can depend on their surface structure. Also, things like dissolution, how stuff dissolves, even optical properties of coatings, or how liquids spread on a surface that's wetting.
So the structure of that interface, the boundary layer as it grows, that dictates the final structure of whatever you're depositing.
Exactly. The microscopic bumps and valleys, they have real consequences for the macroscopic behavior you observe.
Okay, so it's relevant. What's the basic model they're building on? You mentioned ballistic aggregation.
Yeah, think of it simply. Imagine particles just falling straight down, like little raindrops, onto a flat line or a flat plane, and they stick instantly, right where they first make contact with anything that's already there. No bouncing, no rolling, just stick.
That sounds pretty straightforward. Capture some basic physics, maybe, like vapor deposition.
It does capture some key aspects, yes, but this paper adds a specific twist. Finite density, ballistic aggregation.
Finite density. What does that change?
It makes the model more general, a bit more realistic, maybe. They introduce this parameter, they call it P. You can think of P as a probability. At each moment in time, for every single column or site where a particle could fall, there's a probability P that a particle actually does arrive in that column in that time step.
So P controls how busy the incoming stream of particles is. Like if P is small, particles are arriving sparsely, and if P is close to one, it's like a dense rain.
Exactly. It controls the flux density, the rate of arrival. And this P parameter is really important because it lets them directly ask, does changing how crowded this arrival process is fundamentally change how the roughness scales? That was one of their big questions.
Okay, that makes sense. So you've got the model,
Yeah.
but if you're talking about roughness scientifically, you need a number, right? A way to measure it. How did they quantify roughness?
Yeah, they use a standard scientific measure. It's called the interfacial width, usually written as G.
B for width.
Conceptually, it's like, imagine you look at the height of the surface at every single point across your sample. You calculate the average height, then G tells you, sort of, the typical amount that the height at any given point deviates from that average. It's a measure of the fluctuations.
Like the standard deviation of the heights.
Very much like that, yeah. Technically, it's related to something called the height autocorrelation function, G of U, which tells you how correlated the height is between two points, separated by a distance. The width g squared is basically g at zero separation minus the average height squared. It captures those local height variations.
Got it. A precise way to measure bumpiness. So we have the model, the p parameter, the measurement g. What were the main specific questions Bayad and colleagues were trying to answer in this paper?
Well, they laid out a few key ones. First, how does this roughness, this width g, grow over time, especially right at the beginning of the growth process?
Yeah, initial roughening.
Exactly. This is what physicists call short time scaling. You expect g to increase with time t following some power law, like g is proportional to t raised to the power v. Finding that exponent v was a major goal.
Okay, exponent v for time. What else?
Second, they really wanted to pin down the effect of that flux density parameter p. Does changing p actually change the value of v? Or does it change another exponent, a, which describes the long time behavior?
You might guess it would, right? Like a slower, sparser deposition might lead to smoother surfaces, maybe?
Yeah.
Or scale differently.
That's the intuition you might have, so they tested it directly. Third, they focused on this distinction between the geometrical boundary,
which is just
simply the highest particle in each column, just map out the peaks,
okay,
versus what they call the active zone.
Mm.
That's the actual, possibly more jagged surface where the next incoming particle would actually land and stick.
Ah, because there might be overhangs or valleys where growth happens below the absolute highest point.
Precisely. So they asked, how are these two surfaces related? Do they grow at the same rate? Do they have the same roughness scaling in the long run?
Interesting distinction. And the last question.
The last one was about the long time scaling. What happens to the roughness after a very long time or in a very large system? For any finite system size, L, Poblanc, the roughness doesn't just keep growing forever. It eventually sort of saturates.
It reaches a plateau.
Yeah, a statistically steady state where the roughness fluctuates around some average value that depends on the system size, L. They wanted to know how that saturated width scales with L. Does it follow another power law, like G proportional to L to the power A? Finding that exponent A was the final key objective.
Okay, so find V for time scaling, find A for size scaling, see if P matters, and figure out the active zone versus the geometric surface. Got it. Now, what did theory predict before this paper came out? Was there a consensus?
Ah, well, that's part of the story. The theoretical picture was, let's say, developing. And there were already some disagreements or different predictions floating around. The general framework was this idea of a scaling hypothesis, meaning that you expect the roughness G to depend on time T and system size L in a very specific mathematical way. Often written like G is proportional to La times some function of the ratio T LAV. The key point is that the whole behavior, short time and long time, is governed by just those two exponents, A and V.
Okay, so finding A and V is finding the universal scaling law for that growth process.
That's the hope. Now, there were specific theories. One very influential one was from Kardar, Parisi, and Zhang, usually just called KPZ.
Heard of that one.
Yeah, it's a famous. It's a continuum theory. Uses a differential equation to model the surface height changing over time. For growth on a simple line, just one dimension, KPZ predicted very specific values. V, 13 and 8 equals 13.
Okay, 13 and 13 in 1D.
And there was some thinking, based on connectedness to other problems in physics, that maybe those values would hold in higher dimensions too, like 2D.
But were there other ideas?
Oh, yes. For instance, people studied a slightly different, simpler growth model called the single-step model. And by cleverly mapping that model onto a known problem in statistical mechanics, the six-vertex spin model, they came up with different predictions, especially for two dimensions. That mapping suggested a zero and V zero in 2D.
Whoa, zero. That means the roughness doesn't grow with time or system size in that theory. That sounds very different.
Radically different, yeah. So you had KPZ maybe predicting 13, 13, and this other approach predicting 0, 0, at least in 2D. And crucially, as Biot and colleagues point out in their paper, the simulation results that already existed for models similar to ballistic aggregation didn't seem to fit neatly with either of those theoretical predictions.
So the stage was set for some confusion, or at least a lack of clarity.
Definitely. There was already a puzzle brewing about what the correct scaling exponents really were, especially in two dimensions.
Okay, so Bayad and his team decided to tackle this with their finite density ballistic aggregation model. How did they do it? Simulations.
Primarily, yes. They used Monte Carlo simulations. That means they basically programmed a computer to mimic the growth process. They set up virtual grids like checkerboards of different sizes, L.
Okay.
Then they simulated particles falling according to their rules, probability P of arriving in a column, falling straight down, sticking at first contact for different amounts of time or equivalently until a certain average height H was reached. And they did this for various values of P.
And the challenge back then, I guess, was computing power, getting really big systems or running for really long times.
Absolutely. That's always the challenge with simulations, trying to probe asymptotic behavior, the behavior you'd see in an infinitely large system or after infinite time. You're limited by memory and speed. They mentioned pushing those limits for 1988 technology.
Right. Okay, so let's get to the results. What did they find? First, what about that density parameter P? Did it change the scaling?
Okay, this was one of their first really significant findings. They found that the scaling behavior, the values of those exponents, V and A, did not depend on P.
Really? So whether the particles arrived sparsely or densely, the fundamental way the roughness scaled with time and size was the same?
Exactly the same. As long as P wasn't zero, obviously. This was a big deal. It points towards a kind of universality. It suggests that the core physics driving the scaling is robust. It doesn't care about that specific detail of the arrival rate.
That is quite interesting. So, okay, the average speed of growth definitely depends on P, right? Faster arrival, faster growth.
Oh, yeah. The average growth velocity after a very brief initial period was directly proportional to P. And the actual look of the surface, the morphology, might also change with P.
But the scaling exponents themselves, V and A, were independent of P. Wow.
That's what their simulation showed. Then they looked at that relationship between the geometric surface, the highest points, and the active growth zone.
Right, the peaks versus where stuff is actually sticking.
They measured the roughness, the squared width, for both, and they found something neat. The difference between the squared width of the geometric surface and the squared width of the active zone settled down to a constant value after a while.
A constant difference.
Yes. That constant value did depend on P. They found it was related to the growth velocity V, like V times 1P1, but crucially, it was independent of time and system size L once things got going.
Why does that constant difference matter?
It tells you something important. Even though these two surfaces look different up close, they must be growing at the same average rate. And their long-term scaling behavior, their roughness exponents A and V, must be asymptotically identical. If you figure out the scaling for one, you've got it for the other. It simplifies things.
Okay, cool. So now for the main event, the actual values of the exponents they found. Let's start with V, the short time exponent that measures how roughness grows with time. What about in one dimension?
Okay, so for growth on a line, 1D, their simulations consistently gave V equals 13.
One third.
Yep, V13. And importantly, this was independent of P, consistent with their universality finding. And crucially, this value, 13, was exactly what the KPZ theory predicted.
So theory and simulation agree in 1D.
They agree beautifully. And it also matched simulation results people had found for other related models, like the Eden model or standard ballistic deposition without the P, and the single step model. So 1D seemed pretty well understood, consistent across the board. V13 looks solid.
Okay. But I sense a but coming. Here's where it gets really interesting, right?
Right.
What about two dimensions? Growth on a plane.
Exactly. This is where the plot thickens considerably. For 2D, their simulations consistently produced a value for V around 0.22.
0.22.
Yes, V at 0.22. Again, independent of V at zero. But this value, 0.22, was not what the main theories were predicting for 2D.
Okay, what did the theories predict again?
Well, the KPZ theory, or at least the arguments extending it to 2D, predicted V13, which is about 0.33.
Right.
And that other approach, the mapping to the six-vertex model for the single-step case, predicted V0.
So the simulations are giving 0.22 smack in the middle of 0 and 0.33, matching neither.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a little bit off. It was clearly different from both major theoretical predictions. That's a direct contradiction between the numerical experiment and the analytical theories.
Could it be that the simulations just hadn't run long enough? That they weren't seeing the true long-time behavior?
That's always a concern with simulations, the asymptotic limit question. The authors acknowledge this possibility, but they argue that the fact their result, V as 0.22, was completely independent of the flux density P, makes it less likely that they were just stuck in some weird transient regime. It looked like a robust result for their model.
It strongly suggested that 0.22 was the real answer for this model, and the theories were just wrong, at least for 2D ballistic aggregation.
That was the implication, yes. Now, what about A, the longtime exponent, how the saturated roughness scales with system size L?
Yeah, what did they find for A in 2D?
Here, things were a bit trickier. Getting a really clean measurement of A from the saturation plateau in simulations is often noisy. But they presented an estimate based on their data.
Yeah.
Their estimate for A in 2D was roughly around 0.3.
0.3. Okay, how does that compare to theory?
Again, it doesn't match the main predictions. Theory suggested either a 13, around 0.33 from KPZ-like arguments, or a 0 from the 6-vertex connection. So 0.3 is close to 13, but maybe distinct. It's definitely not the 0.
And how did it compare to other simulations around that time?
It was in the ballpark, but maybe slightly different. Previous simulations for similar models had reported A values like 0.33 or 0.36. So their 0.3 was roughly consistent, but perhaps hinted at subtle differences or highlighted the difficulty in pinning down A precisely.
Right. They mentioned difficulties with noise and oscillations in that plateau region when trying to extract A.
Exactly. It's harder to measure A than V sometimes.
Yeah.
But the main point remained. Their estimated value for A, 0.3, also didn't align clearly with the primary theoretical predictions 0 or 13.
Okay, let's try to wrap our heads around this. Let's summarize the key discrepancy.
It boils down to this. In one dimension, everything fits together nicely. Their finite density ballistic aggregation model gives scaling exponents, V13 and implicitly A13, though they focused on V, that match the KPZ theory and results from other simulations. Consistency. But in two dimensions, it's a different story. Their simulations show universality. The exponents don't depend on the flux density P. They find V is a 0.22 and yet a 0.3. And these values consistently, stubbornly refuse to match the predictions from the leading theoretical approaches available in 1988, namely KPZ, V13, A13, or the 6-vertex analogy, V0, A0.
So that was the big punchline of the paper, really.
Absolutely. They introduced this slightly more general model. They confirmed some expected features like universality with P. They clarified that geometric versus active zone relationship. But the most significant contribution was really throwing this persistent 2D discrepancy into sharp relief.
Why is that such a big deal? So simulations didn't match theory. Doesn't that happen?
It does. But this was important because it signaled a fundamental gap in our understanding. We're talking about what seems like a very simple process, particles falling randomly and sticking. Yet the best theoretical tools available at the time couldn't correctly predict how its large-scale roughness behaved in two dimensions, even though they worked in one dimension.
It suggests the physics gets qualitatively harder or different in 2D.
Something complex is happening as you go from 1D to 2D that the theories weren't capturing. The authors themselves were quite blunt about it. They state in the paper that the existing analytical calculations are, quote, unsatisfactory and reflect the, quote, primitive nature of our understanding of even this very simple model.
Wow, primitive nature. They weren't holding back.
No, it was a clear statement that the theory needed significant work to catch up with what the simulations were consistently showing for these kinds of growth processes in 2D.
That really is fascinating. So we've taken this deep dive into a specific scientific paper, looking at how it dissected this phenomenon of surface roughness during growth. We've seen the tools, the model, the simulations, the scaling analysis.
We've seen how those tools can sometimes uncover results that directly challenge the established theoretical framework. That interplay between theory and simulation or experiment is how science moves forward.
The key takeaway here seems to be that sharp contrast between 1D, where things look good, and 2D, where the simulation exponents, best 0.22, 0.3 from this paper and others around that time, just didn't line up with the main theories like KPZ.
Exactly. It wasn't just a small quantitative disagreement. It pointed to something fundamentally not understood about dynamic scaling in these non-equilibrium systems beyond one dimension. It was a clear signal. Theorists, back to the drawing board for 2D.
It's kind of amazing, isn't it? A process that sounds almost trivially simple, particles fall, particles stick, held these scientific secrets in 1988 that were defying the best physics theories available.
It's a great reminder that complexity can emerge from very simple rules. And our models of reality, even in physics, are constantly being tested, refined, and sometimes overturned by careful observation, experiment, or, as in this case, powerful numerical simulations.
And it really leaves you with a thought, doesn't it? What other everyday phenomena, things that seem simple on the surface, maybe frost forming or coffee drying, what hidden scientific depths might they hold that we haven't fully grasped yet?
Precisely. There are probably still plenty of surprises waiting in things we see every day, just waiting for the right model, the right simulation, or the right theoretical insight to unlock them.